Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us today for Get Yourself the Job here on LA Talk Radio. I am Jennifer Cahill, and you're here with my dear friend and co-host, Brandon Maslin. We are exploring uncharted territory today as we have our guest, Alianor Salmon, who is a dear friend of mine who I met in Portugal, talk to us today about her book, Finding Rhythm, where she discusses leaving her comfortable job that many people would dream of at the UN to go dance off into the unknown. Now, before we introduce you to her and read to you a little bit from her bio, I would love first to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary payrolling services and executive search functions, as well as many other recruitment services. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment needs. Now, without further ado, I'll share with you a little bit about who Alianor is and read to you a bit from her bio. Alianor Salmon is a Franco-British writer, researcher, and consultant who has traveled the world studying happiness, education, and social and emotional development for UNESCO and other international organizations. After graduating from King's College in London with a master's degree in war studies, Alianor worked as a field researcher studying issues related to education in Mongolia and along the Thailand-Myanmar border. Then she moved to Bangkok, where she worked for UNESCO before embarking on an international dance journey. Through her blog and Instagram Bailando journey, Alianor has become a dance influencer ambassador, promoting the discovery of cultures through dance and dance's multiple benefits for well-being and personal development. She hosts dance personal development retreats and events and also runs a virtual dance studio and nightclub to support dance professionals. She is currently based in Lisbon, Portugal, which is how she and I connected. So thanks so much for being here, Alianor.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is so much fun. So Brandon, I remember a couple of weeks ago we had a guest on the show and we were talking about this idea of what if the job, the J-O-B we have, isn't our purpose? And what does that mean if it's not? And how do we connect to that? So Alianor, you know, you're a dear friend. We just saw each other for lunch today. I love you so much. And I'm just so grateful that you're here to share your journey, especially this month. I know your book is on special this month for only $1.99 on Kindle. You've been having huge success with it. Maybe tell our listeners a little bit about your story, a little bit about what inspired you to go from being an executive, already having a very successful job at the UN to giving it all up to dance into the unknown.
Thank you so much, Dan, for these questions. I think it's often we have these huge career goals, sometimes very young in life, sometimes we don't know exactly what we want to do. For me, it was always clear that I wanted to work for the UN. And gradually through my studies, it was clear that I wanted to work, especially with education and culture, because I believe that the culture, the arts and education can really help promote peace in the world and in society. And so once I achieved that dream, I started learning so much about it. It gave me the idea of incredibly vivid in the idea of liberating yourself from your desk and actually living fully and being with people and being in the present moment. I thought that it was a wonderful opportunity for me to take a career break, or what I thought would be a career break, and has ended up working as my new life, actually experimenting and learning for myself. I think that, you know, as with a research background, I really love to investigate. I love to learn. And there are so many books that you can read. There's endless information out there. But in the end, it's actually going out and living it yourself. And it was a very terrifying decision. I left behind something that was a dream. But I believe that we have more than one dream in life, actually. I think that we can accomplish different things and they can be very different from themselves. So for me, the idea of learning to dance was to explore a completely different side from this, you know, more diplomatic background, stilettos, nice office attire. I wanted to explore something authentic and different about myself that I hadn't allowed myself to explore before, because I thought maybe it's not serious enough. Maybe people won't take me seriously, or they won't see it as, but in the end, when you let go of what others think, that's when you start to live out your dreams fully.
Absolutely. We just talked about that last week around confidence. That confidence, to some degree, is that moment where you stop caring as much what everyone else thinks, and you start caring a little bit more about what you think. And it's a journey for a lot of people. You mentioned presence, and a lot of my best friends are actors, in particular Broadway actors and theater actors, and they truly are some of the most present people I've met. I'm wondering, though, before we go to the positive, somewhat of the, not the negative, but what is it about a career that causes us not to feel present when we're not in the right role or in the right career for us?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily about the exact career, but perhaps more our way of working. I think that we can have an approach and a mindset to having, for instance, something that I was always very careful about, was balancing active work with focused work, to be present in my work, actually. I also believe that we have general societal factors such as out of control influx of information, or involution, as some people call it, that simply makes it very, very difficult to be present when your attention is on countless emails streaming in, but at the same time you're meant to write and you're meant to coordinate meetings and then sit and listen to people. And I think that this was also a big part of my decision. And now I work as a consultant where I focus on one thing at a time, which has become such a rare commodity. And it's something I had to teach myself, because we've gotten used to being constantly doing a million things, but does it really make us happy? Are we really enjoying the work that we're doing if we're not completely focused on it? And I have to say, dance actually taught me how to focus. And as you mentioned, you have friends that are in theater that are very present. The reality is, when you're learning to dance, you have to focus, otherwise you topple over. There's really no other option. You need to focus on your breath, on your movement, calculating time, calculating spaces. And that has allowed me to apply it to so many other aspects of my life that I think many people could benefit from.
That's a beautiful metaphor for life. If you're not paying attention to what you're doing, you can topple over. I like that.
Yeah. So, Eleanor, I know one of the things that I remember being so inspired when you and I met in Lisbon, I think it was back last October, we're sitting at one of our favorite little restaurants here before we knew one another. And we just started talking about this journey and about how it opened you up as a human being. I think one of the questions that I can kind of hear in our listeners' minds is, it sounds good, but what if, you know, there's always this fear that we all have as mm-hmm. human beings. You know, we might have our stable 9-to-5 job. And in your case, you had a quote unquote dream job working at the UN. And so I think in the back of a lot of our minds, there's this huge, overwhelming, insurmountable fear of, what if I never get that dream again? What if I leave this? What if I lose all the money I have saved up? What if I don't have money saved up? What would your advice be to somebody out there who, you know, might be in a similar position to you, but they're just scared stiff, quite frankly?
No, that's a really valid point. And I have to say, this was probably one of the most terrifying things that I've ever done in my life. And what actually helped me a lot was that I was going through a period of heartbreak and sadness that actually helped you be a bit blind to this fear. It helps you find, you know, you're so determined to go forward with this step to get out of pain and suffering that, you know, when you hear stories of people that have done something similar to myself, and there are so many out there, most of the time they've been through something very difficult just before taking the leap. Now, for those that are not going through something difficult, it's even more scary because you don't have that motivation, right? And what I would definitely advise people is that it's not like you wake up the next day and suddenly you've left everything behind. It's a romanticized idea of it. It sounds wonderful, but I actually planned this trip for 9 months before I embarked on it. I thought very carefully about the consequences. I did some research about career breaks, because it seemed that it was becoming a thing, and people in their early 30s, for instance, or even early 40s, who just want a career break because they never took a break to follow their dreams. And something that reassured me a lot as I was looking on a lot of career advice websites was, if anything, you're more likely to be hired for doing this because it shows the values and the qualities that you have in terms of courage, in terms of planning a trip, of leadership, of going out and doing it on your own and then coming back, and all the skills that you accumulate along the way that would make you a richer human in the workplace or to a team in the future. And this really helped overcome some of my fears because I thought, will I ever be employed again? Will people take me seriously? Will they think I'm not committed enough to my career? But in fact, all of my colleagues supported me. In reality, most people that are hiring, when they see this, what they're likely to think is, oh, I wish I'd done that myself. And I think that it's really important to consider that this, something like this, can be additional value and not necessarily, you don't lose all your work experience just for having taken the leap or taking a break. And I would definitely advise people to plan, to save, and to really think about it. And in the end, everything works out. I mean, in my case, I spent my life savings, and it was the best decision I ever made. And I don't regret it one bit, but I did put in a lot of thought and a lot of planning and a lot of saving as well.
Yeah, it's such a great point that you raised, Eleanor, because what happened, I was in a similar position when I was about 27, 28 years old. I had a six-figure year job working in recruitment. And I just got this itch. I got an itch and I was like, oh, I'm meant to go like lead classes and do workshops, et cetera. And here I was, this young person. I knew nothing about opening a company, and I just up and quit without having anything planned. And although that year wound up being one of the best years of my life as well, it also, I wasn't prepared for it. I think the more you can mentally prepare for it, the more that you can physically prepare for it, like you just said, saving, talking to any of the other people in your life that it might impact, you know, the more that you're going to be able to make a bigger difference in the world, because otherwise it's kind of like what one of my teachers always says, are you being reactive or proactive? And it sounds like the way that you approached it, Eleanor, was very proactive. It wasn't just like, screw you guys, I'm out of here, and, you know, mic drop and leave. It was very thoughtful and very, very considered. Like, you actually took things into consideration. And if I may make a recommendation to anybody out there listening, doing it my way was not the best way. I think I went from making six figures a year to $5,000 in 1 year because I didn't have a plan. All I had was a whim and a dream. And that there is something to be said for thoughtful dream building. As our mutual friend here in Lisbon, Maya Weider, would say, she has the Dream Builder University. You know, it's one thing to have a dream. It's another thing to thoughtfully work towards that dream rather than just kind of throwing caution into the wind and jumping without having anything planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it worked out for you, Jahil. So, you know, who knows?
I mean, true story.
I don't think everyone has a luxury of doing that. I think some people have, you know, financial commitments, family commitments, and other commitments that prevent them from doing it, maybe. But I think it worked out for you. And there is something you said, you know, my favorite line in the book, Good to Great, is staying in the wrong job is like losing years of your life. Keeping someone in the wrong job is like stealing years of their life. And if anyone's ever been in the wrong job, it's true. It is theft. It is every day you're losing energy, unless you find purpose, and you can find purpose within that, right? I mean, but I agree in that concept of, I believe that you should walk towards something, not away from something. And I do think that's vital. And so, Eleanor, how do people sort of do this thoughtfully or dream big? Or is it okay to just walk away with no concrete plan and make $5,000 a year if you can afford it?
I think definitely thinking of what would be the options after. So in my case, I was taking a career break for almost a year, and I was thinking, what are the things that I could do to get back into my position? And I had this plan of working as a freelance consultant and still maintaining my wonderful relationships with my colleagues. And I thought, I'll just do this until it stops working. And I'm 5 years later, I'm still here. But there are two things I'd really love to pick up on, Brandon, if I may, that you said. You said something about being in the wrong job takes years away from your life. There's a line in my book, Finding Rhythm, actually, that I really, really love. And it's at the beginning when I talk about the process. Like the first chapter is about, first two chapters actually are about the kind of the emotional process of deciding to leave and embarking on this journey. And there's a phrase that I love that is, we are so much more than our profession. We're not our job title. And I think so many of us forget that. We think, who is this person? Oh, they're a UN career diplomat. They're a doctor. They're a lawyer. But who are they really? And I think that this comes up so much that we live in a world where so often we assign our own value as our job title rather than who we are. And you don't even need to quit your job and embark on your dreams. You could develop a passion or invest yourself in something in yourself that works on those values and those qualities that are you. And I think that's really, really important and something that a lot of us need, in myself included. That's how I used to think of myself. My identity was completely tied to my career in the UN. I thought my purpose is this, the rest of my life will be this, this is it. But actually we are so much more than our job title.
Yeah, you're certainly speaking to the way I grew up, in my case, on the East Coast in a smaller community where you were a lawyer or a doctor. You know, those are my choices. I wasn't given a lot of choices, and I was a third generation lawyer. And so I wasn't good at math or science. That's my joke. But I always wanted to be in therapy. It's just, I was told that wasn't an option. I had to claw and fight my way back to, turns out not therapy, but you know, what I would define as executive coaching, thought partnership, corporate facilitation. And I think that's one of the beautiful things you mentioned there, that, and I'm a big fan of this. If you do the tour of duty, if you spend your time in the company, there's two ways of doing it. A, if you're a painter and you don't do that for a living, find a way to paint, right? Churchill painted. That's one of his like catharsis. He still won World War II, but he also painted on the side. But the other thing that I think is, if you've done your due, like the UN for you, that's a good question for you. How in your dance, how in your, there's a great song in theater called Go Into Your Dance, Go Into Your Dance. And it's literally about that. It's just like in that moment, just go into it. So I'm wondering actually, because I'm a big fan of this, if you've already done it and you've already, whether it's the label or you've spent the time in Jay Hill's case, entrepreneur and the recruiting, how is that playing a role in when you were a dancer? How did you use those skills? Because I think it is beautiful when we can combine the things we've done in the past with the passion mm-hmm. we're doing today.
Oh, totally. And I think that what made my journey unique, you know, I'm not a professional dancer. I have performed, but I'm by no means advanced or professional. I dance because it brings me joy. But what makes my journey completely unique is that I went into this with the eyes of a researcher in social and emotional development and looked at dance from that perspective. So I started to find so many incredible connections between different types of movements that sparked different emotions or different exercises that stimulated forms of intelligence. I'm a big fan of Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. I don't believe in IQs or anything like that. And I started to realize just how complete dance is in allowing you to grow as a person in terms of your intelligence, your creativity, your social emotional skills, musicality, your own well-being and happiness, being present, femininity even, so many aspects of myself improved. And I think that it was really my background as a researcher and as an analyst that allowed me to take theories that I'd studied as part of my previous work and apply them to dance. I started to recognize a bunch of really fascinating things like the theory of multiple intelligences. I could completely link that to dance. Angela Duckworth's theory of grit. Dance is a fantastic example of grit. Like you can really apply it, see it, feel it in your body, and then use it in other parts of your life. And yeah, I think there's just so much that I found in dance because of the lens that I had from that kind of analytical perspective, that I may not be a professional dancer, but I could look at dance from a different angle. And I'd say also, as someone who really, when I was very young, had this big dream of working at the UN because I wanted more peace in the world, I really do believe that at a micro individual level, dance promotes peace in the world. Because if you're developing your skills, and I saw this based on one of my specializations at UNESCO was peace education. And a lot of the principles that we would advocate for in schools and in education policies, I could actually see it concretely in practice applied through dance. And that was really, really interesting for me, I would say.
Yeah, you inspired me, Eleanor, when we became friends last year. I remember thinking, you know, we have all of this noise in our lives, right? It could be emails, it could be family, it could be just our day-to-day rigmarole that we go through. And you inspired me out of our discussions to start maybe just dancing every day. And I remember when I was living in London recently, there was a lovely gentleman, ironically from Lisbon, named Antonio, who worked outside the building where I was. And he saw me one day, I would walk my dog and I would be dancing, walking the dog. And he's like, I love that. I love that you dance. And then every day kind of became a little bit about, oh, did you dance yet this morning? And, you know, oh, the sun's out. It's a good reason to dance. And I think it's about being self-expressed as human beings. I think we kind of limit our capacity to be creative, be human, is that we say, oh, box. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. It's like we have this box of what being me, being human looks like. And the more that we play with and we dance with that box, and, you know, I know we were talking at lunch today, Eleanor, about dancing with, you know, every aspect of ourselves, instead of just allowing this one side of ourselves, this UN side, this recruiter side, this attorney side to come out. What if we danced with all of these beautiful aspects that allow us to show up as the multidimensional human being that we are? And just like the facets of a diamond, you get to see different things. One person might see me dancing with my dog. Another person might see me speak on stage. And it's still the same person. And how do you allow them all to integrate? So I think that's what is so beautiful about your book.
Boom. That's so good, Jay Hill and Eleanor. That's so brilliant, because I think that is what I was picking up too, is this wonderful question for our audience, which is, how can we incorporate, you know, even if you're not dancing, that spirit of dance? I love that. Was such a beautiful analogy, and I'm sure Eleanor inspired you to get there, Jay Hill. So I'm wondering, it's a beautiful sort of setup of how can we, what did you say? Self-expression, right? I mean, it's so true, that spirit. So how can we incorporate that into our careers or our lives?
That's a really good question. Actually, I really want to expand on the importance of self-expression, because I'm really convinced that dance is the new yoga. And what differentiates it from so many other practices is that it forces you to be yourself. If you ask someone, what is one of the most terrifying things for you, most likely in the top 10, it's getting up and dancing in front of a bunch of strangers or in the middle of the street. Why are we so ashamed of being ourselves? This is something that I that mystified me. And I'll never forget, before leaving Bangkok, when I was still working at the UN, I was at a dinner party at a birthday. And there was a Dominican woman who was a grandmother, and a bachata song, bachata is from Dominican Republic originally, started playing. She got up in the middle of the dinner, it was a seated dinner, and just started dancing by herself. And I remember seeing her and thinking, one day, that is going to be me. I was about a few weeks away from embarking on this journey. I looked at her and I thought, as a result of this journey, learning from Latin cultures, learning from all these incredible dancers, I want to be able to get up in the middle of a dinner party where everyone's sitting down and dance without a care in the world and just be myself without fear of judgment. And I think that this is, you know, we need to be authentically expressed. And when we dance, no one will ever dance exactly the same way. Each of us will have our own way of moving, and yet we feel uncomfortable. We think we're going to look silly. We think that people will make fun of us for the way that we dance, and that's why sometimes it's easier if everyone does exactly the same thing. But actually, that's a reason to do it.
Boom. That's a beautiful theory to life. And I think that's a beautiful theory to careers. It's actually one of the reasons I got out of being a lawyer was there was a point where judges and juries were all, I could walk in and know the judge or see the jury and I know how the case would go. And I would think, you know, for me at least, that felt like a death sentence in its own way, where it wasn't going to make that much of a difference in my life, whether or not Brandon was out there or not. There was a way that law worked that just didn't work for me. That's not to say I don't know a lot of self-expressive lawyers. Some of the best in the world are. But I love that idea of that we should find that thing that we do uniquely well and express it in the way that only we can. And to find our career where we're allowed to bring that full self is such a beautiful evolution of a gift. And some people find that way to do that with numbers, by the way. And some people find that way to do that with all kinds of things. I mean, it does not necessarily mean that you can't be the world's greatest, most creative auditor if you do it in your own authentic self-expressed way. So that's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. So Eleanor, I think one of the questions that I feel our audience is kind of curious about, I always like to tap into kind of the general consciousness because we all are connected. There are some people that are kind of cringing out there as they hear your story and they're going, oh, but what if, et cetera. And there are other people who are on the precipice of thinking, oh, I can do that. And I'd love to know, because I know you have so many wonderful tools in the book. And for anybody out there considering buying it, I know that there's actually a special that you have going on now this month with kind of a step-by-step guide for reading the book that takes you through exercises and self-exploration and self-development. Maybe you could share, and this is for anybody who buys the book or goes to your website, I believe it is, could you share with us maybe some of the tips and tools that you share in these exercises for personal growth and development? So if we are teeter-tottering on the precipice of what could be, who we could be as human beings, how do we begin to kind of choose that direction that we want to go, so we're no longer at the effect of our choice, but we're actively participating in it?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. As you said, I have a special Finding Rhythm Readers bundle that I'm giving away for free to anyone who buys the book. It's on my website, bilandojourney.com/book. And so what I've done is I always thought, how could I connect with the author of my favorite books, and how would I like to connect with them? So I created a reading challenge, which accompanies the reader through a month with emails guiding them on the chapters as they kind of read their way through, but also a workbook with questions. So some of them are related to the history and culture of the countries. I mean, my book, Finding Rhythm, is a memoir. So it reads very much like a novel, even though it's all true. And it's my journey traveling through 8 dream dance destinations. So I think that there's so much the reader can learn from these countries that is maybe different culturally from the way we do things back home. So I've made it very fun. For each chapter, they have a little quiz with like facts about that country, some questions getting deeper into the culture, some others on the emotional journey. And then finally, it's all leading into a question to reflect on themselves. So what I've done is kind of, as I evolve as the main character of this book, get the reader to join me and go through that same journey by answering these questions. And I think it's asking ourselves, you know, the most difficult questions. My book starts with the question that led to me to make this decision, which was, if you could do anything without the limit of time or money, what would you be doing? What would you do? Very often we place limits on our dreams, and it's always time and money. And I think it's so important for anyone, regardless of their background, regardless of their income, to ask themselves this question, why? Some people might think, but wait, I will never have the money or the time. No, but if you ask yourself that question, you'll get ideas that you never thought that you would have.
And can you repeat the question for our audience one more time? I think it's important that we, yeah.
If you could do anything without the limit of time or money, what would you do?
Boom. I love that time and money. I really do. And I think it's because we forget that there is a cost we're paying when we stay stagnant and stuck. And, you know, we had my friend Gurian on about 7 months ago, and she's a fear expert. And I love using fear as a positive, where what is the fear? What is, okay, yeah, I know all the fears if you leave. and you chase your dreams. But what is the fear of you staying? And we don't do that enough. We don't actually do enough of this reverse engineering. So I love the idea that you're playing with, which is the cost of staying or the time you lose. It's a beautiful thematic where we think these things are negative, but they really can be these beautiful positive things that, that spring borders forward. And the other thing you touched on that I thought was so brilliant too was that idea of countries and environments. You know, Jay Hill's in Lisbon and traveling where, I mean, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego / Jennifer Hill is one of my favorite games to play. But I think that, you know, at the same token, we talked about this last week, that confidence can get diminished in the wrong environments, whereas it flourish, right? And I'm wondering for you, how much, I mean, I know we talked about this last week, but dance seems so confident to me. It's I'm in my head when I dance. I know that's, but in our careers, how does that play in? How does the journey you went on, did it instill a greater sense of confidence? Did it allow you to find?
Absolutely. It was one of the biggest takeaways was the development of confidence, because you need to embody it. Dance teaches you to embody confidence. My posture changed, you know, physically, but also in the energy that I gave off. I was studying samba during carnival in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. I learned from carnival queens how to parade through hundreds of thousands, through a crowd of hundreds of thousands of people. And I'll be very honest with you, I wasn't a confidence dancer. I was actually a beginner when I embarked on this journey. And I made a dance video for every dance that I learned. So I learned 18 dances in total. And to be honest, I do not look confident in these videos. I was a beginner. I was absolutely mortified. And one of the biggest lessons was when I wasn't filming, when I wasn't looking what was going on, when I was just rehearsing and enjoying it, I had a smile on my face. I was just more relaxed. And it's incredible in dance just how different your movement is when you're not tensing every single part of your body. It's exactly the same in life. If you're rehearsing and rehearsing for something and you're stiff and you're making yourself so small, you're making your body small, you're hiding yourself from others. In dance, you learn how to expand, how to take up space, how to create shapes with movement, to move around a room and embody an extremely powerful presence without even using words.
Boom.
People see you when you walk in the door. And this really is, I would say, another thing about confidence and fear that I love what you mentioned. Staying stagnant isn't terrifying, but actually, what if the discomfort of fear was just an uncomfortable emotion that you have to go through to then have a breakthrough that makes you feel so much better? And Brené Brown does a lot of work on this. I'm such a big fan of hers. She says, sit with the discomfort. And I say, dance with the discomfort. Just dance with the discomfort, and the reward that you get at the end is so worth it.
And you just gave a masterclass, by the way, which I coach a lot of executives, hundreds of executives. And you just gave a masterclass on what I think executive presence is, which is taking up space, using your voice, being your authentic self. At the end of the day, it's just being you and being proud and not shrinking, but owning it. So that's a masterclass as best I've heard on executive presence as well, at least as I define it. Or as authentic leadership. Jay Hill, you're awesome. I see why you guys are friends, by the way. Like, of course. Can I go get sangria and eat some tapas with you guys somewhere?
Yeah, totally. Come out anytime to Portugal, my friend. We're all here. And, you know, it's funny. As you were saying that, Brandon, I saw Eleanor today. You guys should totally co-collaborate on something. Brandon, with all your executive coaching, and Eleanor, I think you guys should, like, co-create some sort of happiness dance executive thing and transform corporate America in the world. So I'm just putting it out there on the show.
I'm going to leave dancing to her. And if she gets me dancing, then you know we've hit on this. It's something
I'm sure I can get you to dance.
I guarantee you can. My toddler can. I mean, with wild abandon. And she has more. My wife and I always say, if I just had enough, as much confidence as my daughter when she's dancing or performing, we would run the world. It's just amazing to watch that wild abandon that we have as children before the world puts all the stigma and doubt into us.
Exactly. And actually, this is something I believe that I saw this. I read this in the Mastery of Love by Don Miguel. Says if you observe small children, all they want is to love others and be loved. And when they dance, They're not afraid what anyone is thinking of them. Actually, they're being completely themselves until they are conditioned by society to believe that the way that they are is not okay. And I think that we should allow people to express themselves. We should go back to that childlike moment of moving however we want and not caring how it looks. And of course, as an adult, it can look very different. I just posted on Instagram now a video on, I filmed myself improvising to instruments in tango. When you listen to an instrument and you just let your body be guided and move to it, it's just such a magical feeling, but you can't choreograph that. You have to improvise it and you have to not be afraid. It will never look good if you're not being you. And I think that we have a lot to learn from children on that.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I think the most beautiful thing, the first time I ever remember dance being incorporated in a retreat was Alison Armstrong, who I studied with on and off for 7 years. Did a beautiful program on partnership. And part of this is like a 3-day program she did. And part of it was learning how to dance with a partner, learning how to follow and learning how to lead. And I think that's one of the last things that I'd love to just kind of leave everybody with today, is that there's nothing wrong with choosing to be a follower, choosing to be a leader. But when we learn to partner, when we learn to trust ourselves first and trust the people that we're with, that's where we can begin to dance through life. And it doesn't matter what our moves look like. It doesn't matter if we're professional or a beginner, but that's where we begin to have an ease and a flow that doesn't always exist. So I invite everybody out there, go tap into your natural essence, your natural ability to partner. And most importantly, remember, though, that partnership begins with partnering with yourself. So Eleanor Salmon has been here with us today, best-selling author, incredible human being. She is somebody who I look up to, and I'm so grateful you've been here, Eleanor, and, you know, especially doing it at midnight here in Lisbon. So thank you so much for staying up so late with us. I want to reiterate, though, where people can go, especially you have this amazing special this month. Your book is doing phenomenal around the world on Amazon and in other places. Where should people go to find the book or connect with you or get this amazing guided dance journey that you're offering?
Well, first of all, I want to thank both of you for having me here. I am so, so grateful for the opportunity to share this story. And I really hope that many of your listeners will go straight to a dance class after this. You can find my book, Finding Rhythm, An International Dance Journey, anywhere books are sold. So in the US, you can find it in Barnes & Noble, in Walmart, in Target, in Books A Million, in Bookshop. You can order from your local independent bookstore and, of course, Amazon. And the really exciting news is for the month of June only, Finding Rhythm is at $1.99 on Kindle, only for the month of June. And on my website, bailandojourney.com/book, you can just submit your receipt and get this reader's journey that I've developed for free. And I am most active on Instagram at bailandojourney, where I share little videos of dancing and other updates on the book and on life, especially a lot on Lisbon at the moment because we're having an absolutely beautiful start to the summer. So a lot on my current lifestyle here as well.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. It was so funny that you and I were just talking one day and all of a sudden when we had our other guest on, I was like, wait a second, why haven't we had you on the show yet to talk about what a beautiful story. I think that you are kind of like the superwoman of people who are out there, and maybe they're sitting at their desk, and whether you choose to leave your job, pivot and do something new, or maybe just go embrace your passion, something that allows you to come more alive each and every day. I'm intending that every person who hears this, each of you, maybe you talk to, you hear something and there's a spark, there's that spark in your soul that gets activated from hearing this, that has you begin to get curious and inquire, who do I want to be? If I could command my destiny, what would I want that to look like? And Brandon, did you have any closing thoughts, my friend?
Thank you for sharing your story and inspiring me and I think others. And no, I'm going to go get my little dancer in a little bit here. It's school's closing. So I'm going to do pick up and probably put on some good music and take some notes from her and hope that she never allow herself to lose my daughter Stelle, lose her passion for self-expression and who she is. And if we can all do that a little bit more, then I think we'll all live in a happier, healthier world. So thank you, Eleanor, for setting the example. It's really inspiring.
Yes, thank you so much, Eleanor, for inspiring us, inspiring future generations. And I'm going to let everybody in on a little secret. We give you permission to be yourself. Go do it. Go be vibrant. Go live your life. Go dance through life and be the highest, best version of yourself, whatever that looks like. I am Jennifer K. Hill. You've been here with us today, along with my co-host, Brandon Maslin, best-selling author, Eleanor Salmon, joining us today from Lisbon about her book, Finding Rhythm. We're so grateful for however long you are able to be here with us. And we ask if you're interested, if you enjoyed the show, please leave us any comments, perhaps on iTunes. You can also email us your story at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. We would love to hear your stories about maybe career pivots that you've made or some obstacles or opportunities for growth that you've had throughout your career. You can find us on iTunes, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, of course on LAtalkRadio.com as well, and on the LAtalkRadio.com Facebook page, you can also find the video from today. So it's been a pleasure and an honor to be here with you today and wishing you an incredible rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin. Only on LA Talk Radio.